I think there was a time not that long ago when we thought that species were kind of just there. They might ebb and flow, but they would rebound eventually. But sadly, we've realized over time that that's not necessarily the case. We've lost some species as a result, and they'll never be a part of our landscape again. But on a positive note, there have been some huge efforts to protect species that are threatened, and many have rebounded as a result. Larry Mueller here. Today we're talking about Wisconsin's endangered and threatened species and the list. We have an endangered and threatened species list with Rory Pulaski, who's been a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources since 2004. And Rory, thanks a lot for being with us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
And also, Terrell Hyde is a natural heritage inventory assistant zoologist. She's worked with the DNR and the Endangered Resources Natural Heritage Inventory Program since 2001. Wow. Terrell, welcome.
Thank you.
A long time on that same job.
Yeah, I like it.
You like it? Okay. What do you like about it?
Well, it's dynamic and you feel good about what you do, conserving species, like you mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah, it's a great job to have, I would bet. And let's start maybe with definitions here a little bit, because we've got endangered species and we've got threatened species. And Rory, maybe you can talk about the difference between the endangered and the threatened.
Yeah, the endangered species are the most rare. The official definition for the endangered species is any species whose continued existence as a viable component of the state's wild animals or wild plants is determined to be in jeopardy on the basis of scientific data and evidence. And then the threatened species are one step below that, and they're the species that within the foreseeable future we think might get to endangered, the most severe case. From a legal perspective, they're both treated the same under the law, but it's a different distinction within the law based on how rare they are.
Okay, so the threatened, not good, but not as bad as the endangered.
Right. They still need some help, but not quite as bad.
What protections do species get when they're on the list?
It varies for the different type of work that might be that's going to be done. In general, the endangered species law protects from take or mortality of any of the animals, plants, moving the plants around, digging them up. So protects the animals and plants from intentional mortality or any type of mortality, actually.
And Terrell, let's turn to you for a bit here. Let's talk about this natural heritage inventory. How does that dovetailed with the threatened and endangered species list?
Well, it's typically the starting place for proposing a species for adding or removing from the endangered threatened species list. The Natural Heritage Inventory Program, also known as NHI, is a nationwide international program assessing the conservation status of rare species and natural communities. And it's a tool that's used for conservation, management, protection efforts. So every state in the U.S. has an NHI program, and they have a list of rare species. It includes endangered, threatened, and special concern species. And there are state rarity ranks. There are state conservation ranks. So if there is a species that is undergoing some type of threat, we can evaluate that and recalculate. We call it a state conservation rank, an S rank. So we have S1 species, which are critically imperiled, and typically those are our endangered species. We have S2 species, which are imperiled, and those are typically our threatened species. And then we have other species that we're monitoring, we're collecting information, we're researching to track their population condition. And that's usually the starting place where a species that used to be relatively common plummets to an S1 or S2. That's our first flag of saying, hey, we need to reevaluate the species and consider them for addition to the endangered threatened species list.
The thing, how do you know that something like that has happened? Is it people suddenly reporting, hey, I'm not seeing this or that anymore, or we're out there being very proactive in terms of looking in areas, say if it's plants?
Definitely. There's a lot of citizen-based monitoring programs that are the boots on the ground. They're the people who are looking at their natural areas or their favorite bird hiking haunts, and they're not noticing the species that they once noticed. And so they're the ones that are sounding the alarm cry in most cases. There's also lots of other department programs in the Natural Resources Department, our partner agencies, the federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency, NRCS, other programs, too, that are collecting that information and providing it to us.
I'll give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or comment, what questions might you have about this whole process of threatened and endangered and getting on that list, or what about specific species recommended for addition or removal from the list? Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Linda in Pewaukee up first here. Linda, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I drive around and I see the license plates with the wolf on them, and I know that those people have contributed to the Endangered Species Fund. I did not, and I guess I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because I'd be wanting my money back now. And I wonder if there's not some kind of a conflict here. We've let the wolf reestablish itself. You know, we thought it was a good thing, and as soon as they reached a certain number, then it was time to kill half of them. And I just wonder what has public opinion been, and what is your guess, take, or comment on this? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. So I'm sure the range of comment on that particular species has been about as wide as you could imagine, Daryl.
Yeah. The wolf reached its population recovery numbers in 2004 for the Endangered Resources Program. It's a great success story.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it was federally delisted, and at that point management of the species turned over to the Wildlife Management Program in the DNR. And we have heard a lot through the Endangered Threatened Species List revision about this species and concern for it as it's been delisted, and hunting and trapping regulations. Mm-hmm. And
our ultimate goal, you know, with all these species, putting them on the list, I mean, ideally we would have everything get to a common or secure point at some point in time. So the wolf, like Terrell said, really is a success story of what we want to happen, is we want the wolves, whatever animal it is, to get to a point where it's safe enough that we don't have to have that extra protection for it.
Greg in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a question and a comment. When I was a child, I could look up every night and see hundreds of nighthawks take off of all the flat buildings where they nested throughout Milwaukee and fly off to catch insects, and I haven't seen a nighthawk in years. Purple martins, I had 16 pairs of purple martins in my birdhouse. I haven't seen a purple martin since about... I saw one colony of purple martins up in Burnett County, but I haven't seen any for years otherwise. Now, all the insectivorous birds are suffering, and I haven't seen sphinx moths. I haven't seen silk moths, the Polyphemus, the Luna, the beautiful green Luna you see it on television, the Lunesta commercial. But you don't see the Luna moths. I used to collect insects, and I'm sorry I ever killed one, because they're going extinct, and I know why. Because every single gram of gas we burn uses 2.73 liters of oxygen, and natural gas, which they say is clean, uses 3.13 per gram, 3.13 liters of oxygen. We can't continue to do this, but what are we going to do with the species if they can't survive in our environment, like insects?
Yeah. All right. Comments?
Well, two of the eight species that we're proposing to list are leaf and plant hoppers that... like Greg had mentioned, that we're seeing their numbers decline, and they're only found on our rarest and most pristine habitat. So there's definitely a concern there as well. Upland sandpiper, bird, insectivore that we're also looking at and proposing to add to the list. In revising and reviewing species for potential addition to the list, we not only looked at species that were rare and declining in the state to that point of jeopardy, but we also looked at the species where adding them to the list would provide tools for conservation and protection. I know the purple martin was one of those species that made it to our short list of proposing to the list, the Endangered Threatened Species list. And it was decided that there are better efforts, Purple Martin house building projects and other projects like that, that the Endangered Species Act really couldn't address. And that's where you're going to have the biggest bang for your buck in terms of bringing those species. Mm-hmm. Same with nighthawks.
Nighthawks, they're not listed, are they?
They're not listed.
And I think some of this gets back to looking at the legal definition of endangered and threatened in the state. It's the rarest of the rare species we have in the state. So I've definitely heard the same comments before on the purple martin and the nighthawk, definitely. They're definitely species we're keeping in the back of our minds, and they could be declining, likely are declining to some degree, but they still aren't quite at that level where we feel like they warrant official legal protection.
Yeah, so there you go. Thanks, Greg, for calling. And John and Tomahawk, hi.
Hi, I have a question concerning the NHI database. I'm a practicing forester in northern Wisconsin, and we use the database all the time to determine if there are needs or practices that we have to do to alleviate any concerns with the endangered species that may or may not be on the site that we're doing timber harvest on. Some of the NHI hits that we run into, a lot of them are really old and outdated. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the hits are from the 1930s, and there really haven't been any sightings of the endangered resource on these sites, since then. Are there any policies or procedures that go about, other than just general inventories, of the NHI hits to get these specific hits off of the database?
And we're going to address that. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our two guests for an answer. We are so fortunate to live in a state that has such a wealth of natural resources and fascinating species living in them, and we're lucky to have committed professionals, actually, monitoring and protecting those species and areas that need help. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Rory Pulaski and Terrell Hyde work in the Endangered Resources Bureau of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and they have information to share with us about what species are being considered for addition to the endangered and threatened list, which ones may be removed, and they're happy to answer your questions when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. We will send you regular updates of upcoming show topics, and we'll be back with our guests right after this look at the news. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You know, we're really lucky to have the committed professionals that we have here in the state who monitor and protect the species that we have here in Wisconsin, some of them threatened, some of them endangered. We have a list, a threatened and endangered list. The sad thing is when they go on the list, the good, happy thing is when we can get some of those animals or plants or insects off the list, then that's always a time when we can sort of celebrate. A couple of the people who really work hard in this area, Rory Pulaski, been a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources since 2004, works primarily with amphibians, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, amphibians and reptiles, and then also Endangered Species Act policy work, too.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming, Rory.
Yeah,
appreciate
you're welcome.
It. Also with us, Terrell Hyde, who is the Natural Heritage Inventory Assistant Zoologist. That's a long title.
It's actually shortened.
Is it?
Mapping Specialist goes on that as well.
I like that better. Mapping Specialist. Also with the Department of Natural Resources and the Endangered Resources Natural Heritage Inventory Program. Anyway, you've been there since 2001, so you must be having a good time and like what you're doing.
I do.
Welcome to back to the program. Thank you so much. We had a question from John and Tomahawk earlier on about the NHI database, and he was saying that you can look up and sometimes the first, maybe explain again what the database shows what.
Yeah, the database is a collection of all of our endangered and threatened species in Wisconsin, as well as the special concern species. And those are the species that are kind of maybe some questions about them, but they're not legally protected. We don't feel like they quite warrant that, but we're kind of keeping a close eye on them because they look like they could be declining or there's questions about them. So those three categories of species are on the list. And then the database itself, it's a spatial database as well as tabular data. So we have the shapes, locations of where the species are with the boundaries of where they've been found, and then also any of the additional tabular data that goes with that. The year that the species was last found, any other species that were found with it, the age of the animal that was found, number of plants that were found in the area. So it's a collection of data that we have in the state. And right now, I think we have about 20,000 records in that database.
And so it is possible that you could, as John was saying, that you might find in one spot a list of a species of one sort or another, and the last sighting is like 1930 or something.
Yeah, that definitely happens, and it gets back to a little bit what Terrell was discussing before, that we have so many different types of people and organizations that supply data to that database. You know, DNR staff could be out doing, you know, full inventories and surveys on a property and get a lot of data. We get a lot of data from, you know, just citizens across the state that see a turtle crossing the road and they know it's a rare turtle and they report that. You know, we've also gone through and we have data from, which is a lot of probably what the 1930s data is. We have some even back to the late 1800s that were, you know, old handwritten notes probably from biologists, you know, over 100 years ago. So it's a lot of different types of data that are included. And so the 1930s hits are not that uncommon because we can just have random records reported. What probably happened in a case like that is there could have been someone in the area that just happened to be passing through, saw the rare species, reported it, it went into the database, and that's the last time it's been observed there. But we likely have never been able to go back there and resurvey that. There's just so much land in the state, we just can't resurvey every piece of property, especially true on private land. Obviously, a lot of our data comes more from public property. It's easier to get access onto. The other thing for John to keep in mind, too, is that, you know, if we have an area where we're absolutely sure we can determine absence that the species has disappeared or is no longer present in the area, we remove it from the database. So the records that he's seeing in the database are only species that we believe still have a likelihood to be there.
There we go. John, again, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that call. You can join in again, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You may have a question about the process or about specific species that are recommended for addition or removal from the list. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, too, as we go along here. But Gary and Boscobel, let's turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling. Gary, are you there? We may have lost Gary. All right. He had a question relating to funding and funding cuts to state areas, so the endangered program and so forth. Comments on that?
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure exactly which cuts he was referring to, but, you know, there are cuts that are occurring to different areas. And I think one of our best solutions to try to offset some of those funding cuts is to really focus on the citizen volunteers and citizen monitors that we have around the state. You know, it's obviously a lot of people out there on the ground that can collect data for us, so we have to get creative sometimes in how we deal with funding cuts, but the citizen monitoring program that we have in Wisconsin, we've been really putting an emphasis on the last several years, and that will help with any funding cuts that we have to deal with.
I'm sorry we lost Gary, because he is a volunteer helping out with the we may get him back here in just a second. Let me give the number, by the way, for you to join in. Maybe you're a volunteer. Have you ever volunteered for this program? Or might have questions about how to volunteer. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. And as a matter of fact, got Gary from Boscobel back. Gary, hi. Thanks for coming back to us.
Thank you, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. As your guests know, that the funding for the Bureau of Endangered Resources is being cut back severely, and as a result, the Bureau is asking a lot of citizens to help in management of some of the natural areas, and I'm one of them. And part of our management needs are using fire and herbicides for working on these prairies and savanna remnants. And unfortunately, the requirements for fire training and herbicide application are set so high, and they are so cumbersome for those of us who are volunteers out here that it's really starting to discourage us from wanting to participate and helping the BER do these essential management. And I would just like to ask your guests to be supportive of the idea of creating rules that are specifically made, for instance, for small fires instead of required training that would be for burning large areas in the West. And for herbicide application, we are not required to have a complex and difficult herbicide applicator's license, but something in between, so that it takes the tremendous burden of requirements off of us volunteers, so we can get to work on these sites. Because if the volunteers aren't there and the BER isn't there, these sites are the ones that suffer ultimately, in the species that are there that the state is required to be good stewards of. So really looking for help and trying to change these rules to fit the needs of the volunteers.
Thanks a lot, Gary, for calling. Any comments, Terrell?
I was going to follow up. Rory had mentioned, you know, suppliers of information, but actual on-the-ground management, that there are a lot of partnerships and volunteers and friends groups that are doing a lot of work on our natural areas, and we appreciate, and we would be lost without them, like Gary had mentioned. And I think in terms of proposing a rule, that type of thing, I think that should come from the volunteers. And like Gary had mentioned, that if there's something that we can do in order to ensure that our volunteers and friends groups stick around and can help us implement management on these natural areas, which harbor the majority of our rare species.
It needs to, and so it needs kind of to come from them, frankly, the volunteers.
For a rule change, and we can go back and we can address this within our own department and see what we can do in order to change. But if it requires rule or legislative change, that kind of thing, it's best coming from private citizens. Agencies and state workers can't start that process.
Carol in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm calling because I've always been intrigued by the slender glass lizard that we have in the state, apparently. And as I understand, it's endangered or rare in a few pockets of environment that they'll be found in. I'm just curious if you had anything to say about the existence of that lizard in the state and if you've ever been so lucky as to see one out in the wild. And
yeah.
I'll just listen off the air.
Slender glass lizard.
I know. I have never observed one. I think it's because my title's so long, I don't get out into the field. But they are, and whenever we get a picture of someone submitting them, they are just the neatest critter.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to get to see them a few times, and I agree with Carl. They're a pretty interesting species. It's a legless lizard. Most people mistake it for a snake. It looks very similar to a snake. Brown stripe and coloring, you know, and it looks like some of our snake species. Yes, it's definitely an endangered species in Wisconsin. It was not one that we considered to make any changes to with this list revision we're going through right now. It's a pretty rare species in the state. It prefers typically more open canopy habitat, but definitely sandy soils. It's a burrowing lizard, so it digs its own holes. It's a fossorial species. It overwinters underground. It spends, you know, can spend up to 90% of its time underground. So they're pretty tough to see. They're pretty quick little lizards too, as most of them are. But yes, that is one of our endangered species in Wisconsin. It's primarily found, again, in sandy habitats, more in the southern and southwestern parts of the state.
So it is on the list.
It is on the list, yes.
Okay. What are the, we've talked a little bit about the list is changing, and I think you mentioned a few, but I think it'd probably be worth repeating. What are some species that are coming on the list that we haven't had on the list?
Yeah, and going back a little bit further, just for a little history, the list was first created in 1972, and it's been revised with 10 major list revisions. However, as a species meets its population recovery goals, such as the case with the gray wolf, trumpeter swan, osprey, bald eagle, they can be removed. Or, as was the case with the four cave bat species, they were listed because of the threat of white nose syndrome. The 16 species, we have 16 that we're proposing to delist, and they're being proposed for various reasons. Like the Bewick wren, has not been observed in the state since the 1940s, and it was very low numbers back when it was. We're not considered part of the species range. The snowy egret is a species that there was one breeding pair found in the eastern part of the state, and they show up infrequently, maybe once, you know, within a five-year period.
So these are coming off?
They're coming off the list because as we evaluated the list, we looked at, okay, what species are in jeopardy of not remaining in the state, and also where does the Endangered Species Act help in their conservation and protection? And as we looked at that list, we cleaned it up a little bit in terms of the Bewick wren, the snowy egret. Really, are these regularly occurring species in the state that we want to keep on the list? Because focusing the list on just those species that are most at risk makes the list more powerful in terms of getting management, protection, conservation efforts, focusing our decreasing funds.
Yeah, I can see where that would make a big difference. Okay, so those are two. How about some more?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of inventory management efforts, whether conducted by department biologists or by citizen scientists, where we have a lot more information on the species, where we can point to it and say, you know what, the species is stabilized. Through monitoring, we know that, like for the greater red horse, the species is found regularly. It's not decreasing in numbers. It's stabilized. Same with the pygmy snake tail. And that one is more of an effort of monitoring, where we looked at where it was found, and then we looked for other areas in the state and had targeted inventory work, and we found new populations.
Oh,
so,
good.
There are other species, several of the plants, that are responding well to management. They're reproducing. Yellow gentian is one of those, bog bluegrass, snowy campion. There are two plants, the hemlock parsley and the Canada horsebalm, which are considered extirpated in the state. The Canada horsebalm, we only know of two locations in the state where it occurred, and both of those are, well, one of those is destroyed and the other one hasn't been observed in 145 years. So
probably a pretty good clue that they're not around.
Yeah, and both of those species are large and easy to identify.
Yeah. All right, we have Jim in Castle Rock Lake with a comment. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Jim's wife, Karen.
Oh, hi, Karen.
Hi. Well, our question is this. We are on what we call the narrows between Castle Rock Lake and Peatonwell Lake. It's just outside of Nisita, maybe 3-4 miles.
I know that spot.
Yes, it's lovely. It's beautiful. And we now have the migrating trumpeter swans by the dozen here. And they sleep right outside, right on our shore, right here. We're very lucky. But we wanted to know, is anybody interested in finding out the numbers on the, many of them are banded, and we can't find anybody that's interested enough to want to find out about that.
Well, immediately, Sumner Mattson in the Endangered Resources Program is the first person that comes to mind, that he does still collect that information. Many of the species that have been delisted previously because they met their population recovery goals are still being tracked and monitored to make sure that they don't slip back and they aren't experiencing a decline. So our Bureau of Endangered Resources website has contact information. It could be sent to the general number, and there used to be an online reporting form for the trumpeter swans.
Yes.
And I'm looking at Rory because I'm not sure. We recently went through a web redesign. But I would start with the Bureau of Endangered Resources email address and email. Madeline is the person that checks that. And ask her where you can send your observations. because yeah. it's great All information.
Right. We'll do that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your call. Are there others on the list or are some that are coming off the list or other species that are coming off the list?
Yeah. There is the barn owl, which is a species that in the...
B-A-R-N.
B-A-R-N, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not barred.
No, thanks. And it's a species that infrequently nests in the state. You know, some years we won't have any nests reported. Some years we might have one or two. It's usually in the very low numbers. They nest in, you know, abandoned buildings, barns, silos, caves sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's a species that we're on the edge of its range, and it really hasn't occurred here. And so this is a species that we're proposing to delist again so we can focus on the most at-risk species. Blanding's turtle and Butler's garter snakes are two reptiles that we're proposing to delist. And both of those, because of either new information that has been gathered, like for the Butler's garter snake, on the genetics and the risk of hybridization, and as well as its range has expanded based on research and inventory efforts recently, that shows that the species should no longer be considered imperiled in the state. That, you know, it's locally common in some areas, and it is in a certain portion of the state. And the Blanding's turtle is a species that was listed in 1979, and I'm looking at Rory because she might have more to add on these two species. But we have quite a few NHI records on the species in the majority of the state, and we know of many sites where the species is reproducing and it's what we call viable and it's doing well. Both, you know, the Blanding's turtle, as most reptiles and amphibians and insectivores, like the earlier caller mentioned, you know, they are experiencing declines because of what is happening.
What are we most concerned? There are three, four, five species that we're saying, oh, just think about this, or we're really worried about you're ever going to make it.
There are two species immediately that come to mind of the eight. I mean, all of the eight are being listed because we do see them as being in jeopardy, and that there are conservation protection efforts that we can employ to bring those back from the brink of being gone in the state. The two species that come to mind, though, that are experiencing range-wide as well as Wisconsin declines are the Atoe skipper and the fawn's foot mussel. Both of those species, especially the fawn's foot mussel, used to be widespread and found regularly in the Mississippi River, Wisconsin, and their tributaries. And sites where you found them, you're not finding them anymore, or if you're finding them, it's really in low numbers. And that's the case for that species range-wide in the country. It was listed in Ontario recently, and they're not sure of the reason for that. So there's not only research that needs to take place, but also protection efforts.
You've got a nice publication on Wisconsin Endangered and Threatened Species, the law on the list, obviously, and there's some good information, I think, on aside from the listing, about the definitions, about violations, about the state laws relating to endangered and threatened species, which I think is great.
Yeah, and this process, too, on the department's website, if you search ET list, it'll bring up a lot of documents, you know, documents that we use to help guide this process for reviewing and revising the list, how people can provide comments, what the next steps are.
And there's, you know, a lot of information on the species on the website as well. Not only the species we're proposing for listing and delisting, but the majority of the other species as well. So there's a lot of information on individual species if people are looking for that.
And I had some photos or shots, a lot of pictures of the various things too, which I think is interesting and fun to kind of look at, colored and so forth. Well, this has been great. And the process is, when is this process? It's an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It is an ongoing thing, and I think that's what I would encourage people who are listening that have information or have observations to send them to us, and because that's the starting place for many of these proposals. In the current rule process for revising this package of potentially delisting the 16 species or adding the 8, is nearing. We're considering all the public comments we just received.
Well, thank you, Rory and Terrell, so much for being with us today. As the time flew here, Rory Pulaski and Terrell Hyde from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Endangered Species Program. Look for that on your tax form. It'll be there, although the loon won't. The picture won't.